Well, good morning.
Hello. It's good to see everybody. We are in a series called The Nehemiah Project. We're talking about building personal vision. If you're just getting started with us, we're glad that you're here. So we're going to be in Nehemiah again this morning. Before we get started, back in 1982, there's a story told of when Disney was getting ready to open up their Epcot Center. And they were getting ready to open up this center. Walt Disney, the original visionary for this thing, he had already died a number of years before. And so they thought it would be a good idea, some of the executives, to bring in his wife to do sort of the ceremonial ribbon cutting type thing. So they brought her in, and she got ready to go up there on stage and, kind of give a speech, say a few words. And one of the executives there said to Walt Disney's wife, said, "Wouldn't it just have been great if Walt Disney could have seen this?" And you may have heard her response. She simply said, "He did." What she was pointing out there, that though Walt Disney was never able to see the fulfillment of his vision, he still saw in his mind what it was that he wanted to see happen. Walt Disney was a man who was characterized by this sense of vision, this sense of a preferred future. And we've talked about this idea of vision and how it hits home with each one of us. And the thing that we're wanting to communicate is that vision is not something that's just for business people or leaders or church folks. Vision is something that actually God has in store for all of us, because God is a God of hope. God has something in store for your future. The question is, are you trying to track with Him and understand what it is that God wants to do in your life? What is the vision, this mental image, this compelling image of a preferred future? Are you tracking with Him and trying to discover that, to follow the vision that He has for your life? And when we look at a picture of a guy like Walt Disney, it all shows us the potential power for vision. But unfortunately, not all visions get realized. There was also a guy, and some of you may not know this, named Charlie Daniels. Anybody know Charlie Daniels? You probably wouldn't think of him as a visionary. Devil went down to Georgia, that whole song. Well, Charlie Daniels, back in 1994, he got this big vision with one of his buddies, a stockbroker from Florida, to go and build this huge rodeo arena, this big complex where they could have rodeos and concert venues. They had this vision to go and build this this place where there could be hotels and restaurants and all these sorts of things. They found land, almost 2,000 acres, outside of a town called Saddlebrook, Florida. They even hired a company to come in and help them figure out how to theme this. They were going to have a theme park. I mean, just the whole bit. Massive, massive vision. That was in 1994. As of 2011, if you were to drive to that location, that 2,000 acres near Saddlebrook, Florida, you know what you would find? You'd find nothing. Nothing has ever come of their vision. So the question on the front end and I want to raise to you is, what's the difference between a Walt Disney, or think about it concretely, what's the difference in your life between whether or not what you sense God is leading you to do, whether or not that actually becomes a reality? Because wherever you are in terms of understanding what God's vision for your life is, the direction that He wants to take you, God does have somewhere that He wants to move you. The question is, will whatever it is that He wants to see happen in your life actually take place? Because if we don't have this understanding of what we're going to talk about today, this is the point at which many visions die. And there may be something that God is doing in you right now in this season of your life. It may be something small that has to do with your own personal life. It may be something larger that has to do with groups of people. But whatever it is that God is doing in you and He wants to do through you, whether or not you are able to capitalize on what we're going to talk about this morning will to a large extent determine whether or not that vision, that thing that God is doing in you, is ever going to become a reality. And here's why I say that. Because in order for us to take vision and let that vision actually become reality, we have to do what Walt Disney was able to do, and that is to get people to share it, to get someone to buy into that idea. In the case of Charlie Daniels, they needed a lot of people to give money, but they couldn't get people to share that vision. And on a smaller scale, but a very real, tangible scale, if you in your life, the thing that God is leading you to, if you can't find ways to get people to share what it is that God is stirring in you, then in reality, the chances of that vision ever coming into reality are very nil. And I don't know if you've had this experience or not, but if you've ever shared with somebody maybe an idea you had, it may have been just kind of something that you had a hunch, maybe God wants me to pursue this. sometimes when you share that, you can get one of two responses. You can get the seriously kind of response, where people look at you and they're like, you want to do that? Or you can get, if they're a little more polite, they may give you, oh, that's nice. You know, that's nice that you want to do that. That's nice that you want to see that happen. And inevitably, here's where many visions die. Because we feel like God's stirring something in me. I know it sounds a little bit weird. It sounds a little bit strange. But there's something there. And then when we go public, when we share that God is doing in us, and people aren't just encouraging us and saying, okay, that's an excellent idea, we love it. Oftentimes, that's where the vision, the calling that God is placing on us, it just dies. It just dies because we haven't figured out how to get people to share the vision. So the question that I raise for you today is, if God is moving in your life, directing you in some way, how is it that you get people to share that vision? Because in order for a vision to be accomplished, in order for something significant to happen, whether it's just in your own life or in the lives of lots of other people around you, we have to figure out ways to get people to share that vision, or else that thing is going to die. So, wherever you are, wherever you're tracking in terms of understanding your vision, ask this question. How is it that I can take whatever it is that God is doing in me and share that with others? That's what we're going to look at today. In Nehemiah chapter 2, if you'll open up with me, we're going to see here how Nehemiah took a group of people whom he didn't know. He was traveling over 700 miles into the city of Jerusalem, as we've talked before, to rebuild this wall that had been broken down. Now, you think about Nehemiah's challenge. Up until this point in the story, Nehemiah has been broken for the condition of Jerusalem. He's fasted, he's prayed, he's wept, he's gone to the king, Artaxerxes, and the king has given him his favor or his approval. Nehemiah has had a lot of things happen kind of that have been in his favor up until this point in the story. Nehemiah, his vision is to rebuild the wall. All right, so a lot of the things that have happened so far are aimed in that direction. Things are going really well, but he still has one major hurdle. He has to get other people to share this vision with him. And let's think for a second how difficult this would be in Nehemiah's setting. You may think it may be difficult in your setting to get people to share the vision that God is placing in you. Nehemiah, he had to get an entire group of people who had been living in the condition of Jerusalem for years and years, who had become desensitized to the walls being broken down. And he had to convince them that they should arise and build. He had to convince them that they should stop what they were doing. They were living in an agrarian society where if you didn't work, you didn't eat. He had to go in and mobilize this group of people to become this army that was united to rebuild the walls. Huge, huge challenge. How did Nehemiah do it? How did Nehemiah get people to share this vision? That same question is the question that you need to ask in your life. How can I get others, whether it's just one person in my own immediate family or a multitude of other people, how can I get them to share this vision? The central truth that I want to lay out for you is this. And we'll look at this from Nehemiah 2, verses 16 through 18. If you want others to share the vision, you have to show the vision. If you want others to share what it is that God is doing in you, you have to show what God is doing in you. There are three steps to showing the vision that we find from Nehemiah chapter 2. Look in verses 16 through 18. In verse 16, we just kind of get the backdrop here, the setting. It says that the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. Nor had I as yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the rest who did the work. Basically, at this point, Nehemiah has journeyed into Jerusalem. He's made that trek 700 to 900 miles from Susa, the capital, down in Jerusalem. He has inspected the walls. He spent about 3 days trying to kind of look at the destruction, formulate some kind of a plan. But people didn't know what was in his heart yet. So that's the setting. Nehemiah has kind of held this in for months and months and months. And in verse 17, he's going to help show the vision to people so that they can share it. And step number one we find in Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 17. Then I said to them, you see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates burned by fire. The first thing that Nehemiah does here to help people share the vision is he defines the problem. He defines the problem very, very simply when he says, you see, the bad situation where you're in, Jerusalem is desolate and its gates are burned by fire. And in defining the problem, what he's doing is helping them to know that something should be done. I mean, he's coming to the people who have become desensitized, they've kind of been calloused and just accepted dysfunction. They have accepted brokenness. They have accepted the ruin and the decay that exists in their lives. They've accepted this, and Nehemiah is going to them and saying, this is not right. He, as a leader here, comes in and says, I want to define the problem for you so that you can understand what's at stake here. And the big reason why this is so important that we define the problem is because if we don't, people won't understand why it is that we're doing what it is that we feel like we need to do. That's why one of the reasons with Harvest 2020, one of the things that we need to keep in view as a body is that there are over 30,000 people within a 15-mile radius of this area right here who aren't connected to a body of Christ or probably just don't even know Jesus. And so Nehemiah here, he understands he has to define the problem. So for you in your life, what is the problem? What is the area of brokenness that you feel like God is stirring you in? What is the problem that needs to be addressed? That when you look at it, you say, something has to happen here. As you're trying to track and figure out, okay, what's God's vision for my life? Oftentimes, as we've said before, vision begins as a solution to a problem. And what's the problem? Nehemiah understood the problem. Jerusalem was broken down. What's the problem in your life that needs to be addressed? Do you have a passion for kids who are mistreated? Do you have a passion for women who are in situations where they desperately need help? Do you have a passion for elderly people? What is it that breaks you? What is it that stirs you? You have to define the problem. And if we don't do this, people really won't care about what it is that we want to see happen if they don't understand why it is that it needs to happen. Stories told, and I'm absolutely certain it's a fictitious story because when I tell it to you, you'll understand this is totally not true to life situation, especially in a Baptist church. Stories told of a church, and they had an issue, a little country church, of termites being inside their building. And so they came together and said, have a meeting about it. They may have had like a committee assigned to it and all that kind of thing. I'm not sure. But anyway, they said, we got to meet about this and figure out what we're going to do about these termites. So they had the first meeting, and, Farmer John in the back, he's thinking, well, we just need to spray the suckers, bring somebody in, just douse them. Well, another lady in the congregation was out there, and she said, I don't think we should spray them because that might be bad on the environment. And, so you got these different viewpoints coming together here. And so they talk about this for a while, the ethical nature of should we spray, should we not spray, should we spray, should we not spray. So they finally are like, we've been here for an hour, let's just disband, kind of table that and talk about it later. Well, they go into the second meeting, and some people are kind of of the opinion, that they should spray. It's a little bit undecided, but if they were to spray, the big question is, who would they get to do it? Because you can't just get anybody to spray. Should you get this national chain? Should you get the local guy? Or should you get John's brother who kind of does this thing on the side? So they talked about whether or not, they should get this big company or small company or an individual. They went through all the details. They discussed. Finally, at the end of the night, they said, well, we don't know. Who we should get to spray? Let's don't worry about it. So they end that second meeting. They go into the third meeting. Again, have you ever seen anything like this happen? Totally unrealistic. But, they go into the third meeting. And so they're thinking, all right, should we do this? Should we try to get rid of these termites? Well, we don't even know if we have enough money to spray. If you people would just start tithing and start giving, then we'd have enough money. So they went into this big discussion about having enough money, not having enough money, is it worth it? So they ended that third meeting just tabling the issue. Should you spray for the termites or not? Finally, in the fourth meeting, the pastor came in with this big jar, this big mason jar. Inside this big mason jar were these clumps of wood, and termites were just eating away at the wood, fragile, weak wood. He set the termites in front of them, and he says, here, let me define the problem. And as soon as the people defined the problem, they took action. They voted, they took up an emergency collection, they had somebody to come in and kill the stinking termites. But until people understand what the problem is, they're not going to have a solution to the problem. They're not going to be moved to act. And here's what you need to understand. there are probably things that God has shown you or is in the midst of showing you that there are problems that exist around you. And as opposed to saying, well, let's talk about it, let's think about it, define the problem. What is it that needs to take place? What is it about which you would say something has to happen here? And when you think about getting other people to share that vision, if you're going to show that vision to them, you have to define the problem. And in defining the problem, here's what you're going to do. You're going to show them that something should be done. So what's the problem? What's the problem in your life that needs to be addressed? That's step number one. Step number two that Nehemiah took is not only did he define the problem, secondly, after he defined the problem, it set him up to do this, to cast the vision. To cast the vision. And when he defined the problem, this helped the people see it. It allowed him to show the people that something should be done. But when he cast the vision, he was able to show the people that something can be done. Look at what he does in verse 17, the second half of this verse. After he's defined the problem about Jerusalem, he says this. He says, come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. Why? So that we will no longer be a reproach. In this one sentence here, Nehemiah defines for the people what the vision is. He casts it for them. And so it's not enough for them just to understand that something should be done. He's coming to the people and saying something can be done. And this is a huge shift. Whenever this transition takes place in your heart, I'm convinced that for many people, this is where vision dies. Because you might be gripped by a problem. You might think, oh yeah, there's an issue. But that's somebody else's problem. That's for somebody else to worry about. But what happens here is that Nehemiah, he doesn't say that's somebody else's issue. Nehemiah, not only does he define the problem, he casts the vision. And so if you think about where you are in terms of your ability to share the vision with others by showing them the vision, I mean, if it is the case that you really want others to share the vision and you're ready to show it to them, the second thing you have to do is to cast the vision. Help people believe that what it is you're talking about doing can actually be done. And for Nehemiah, keep in mind, this is why it was so very important that he had spent time praying and fasting and working through the calling and the vision before he presented it publicly. Because you know that there were people in the background saying, well, how's he going to do that? I'd like to see that happen. You just know the nature of humans, that there was some element in there that kind of had that bent. There was others, you know, with Sanballat and Tobiah and different people in other regions who they criticized this vision. They mocked this vision. But Nehemiah was able to cast the vision. And so I would ask you this. If you've understood, okay, what the problem is that you feel like God is calling you to, then secondly, cast the vision. And in casting the vision, here's what I would ask you to think through. What will it look like to see that problem solved? If you have a burden and you just have this sense that there are children who are unwanted and you are gripped to do something about that, and you want to make a dent maybe in abortion, you want to make a dent in the foster agency, ask yourself, what will it look like to see that problem solved? Well, it looks like children who have mothers who are waiting for them. It looks like children who are wanted. It looks like there's an easy way to facilitate that transition so that children cannot be in foster care any longer. And see, if you have a burden or a vision for something like that, begin asking the question, what does it look like to see this come to fruition? And your vision may not be something that, you know, that weighty or consequential. Your vision may have something to do with you're just going to become more financially independent. You're going to get control of your finances. You're going to become debt-free because, by golly, you want to be a generous giver to the glory of God. And so if you ask yourself the question, what's the problem here? My problem is I spend money on everything that I see. Well, keep coming to this church, and we won't talk about that later. But otherwise, you know, if you're going to spend money wherever you see, we'll just take up your money right now. But anyway, otherwise, if you're going to define the problem, the second thing you need to do in casting the vision is actually ask yourself, what does this look like when my vision comes to reality? What does it look like to live a life that's debt-free? What does it look like to live a life where I'm in control? Whatever it is that God's calling you to, first define the problem, then secondly, cast the vision. Help people see that something can be done. The third step is from verse 18. After you've defined the problem, after you've cast the vision, number three, and this chronologically is probably the first thing you need to do, but number three, establish your credibility. Establish your credibility. Look in verse 18. It says, I told them, Nehemiah says, I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me, and also about the king's words which he had spoken to me. Then they said, let us arise and build. So they put their hands to the good work. The third step that Nehemiah took to show the vision to the people was he established his credibility. He was able to say to the people, here's how God has worked in my life to bring me to the point where I am right now. And as you think about whether or not you're going to be trustworthy, whether or not you're going to be someone who has credibility, ask yourself this question. What are the indications that God is working in your life to show you that this is indeed something that he would want to see happen? You see, it's been said that people believe in the messenger before they believe in the message. And if people don't believe the one who is presenting this, and this, again, this is true if it's in the small context of just your immediate family, or if it's a larger context where you're dealing with groups of people. People have to believe in the messenger before they believe in the message. So if you have a relatively small vision to see something happen in your family, in your marriage, or if you have a large vision, something to happen in the lives of other people, people have to believe in you. They have to believe in the messenger before they believe in the message. And so as I think about what God is doing in people's lives through this entire series, there's a part of me that gets very excited. Because what God is doing is he's helping people grab and capture what it is that he wants to do in their lives. I got a story this past week of one couple, some friends of ours, who they're so taking seriously this idea that God has something in store for them that they're going to become foster children, foster parents. If they don't become foster children, they're going to become foster parents. They're going to go through that process. Hear other stories about things that God is doing in people's lives. But the thing that we want you to know is that God does have something in store for you. And when you get to that point where you have to help people share the vision by showing them the vision, you can define the problem, you can cast the vision, and lastly, you can establish credibility. When you establish credibility, you're basically showing people that something will be done. And when you're able to do those three things, show people that something should be done, something can be done, and then finally, because you are a credible person, that something will be done, then you're staged to gather people. And you don't have to walk through this entire process of implementing this vision on your own. Then you have people who are going to come beside you. So it may be that you just need somebody to come along and encourage you, to validate you, to say, hey, I'm with you in this. It may be that to see the vision that God has put in you to be fulfilled, it may be that you need people to come along financially and back that. It may be that you need people to come along and volunteer their time. It may be that you need somebody to be open to something that they hadn't been open to before. But whatever it is, if you walk through those three steps, then you're going to be more prepared in the future to share that vision with others by showing that vision with others. Now, my guess is if you've walked through this far into the series with us, this may just be your first morning here. Regardless, one of the questions you're asking is, what's the big deal about this whole vision thing? I mean, vision, talking a lot about vision. Why is this so important? The reason why this is so important is because God, through his son Jesus Christ, I believe is the greatest visionary. He is the model, he is the lead, he is the role of visionary for this world. And what I mean by that is, if I may just introduce you to this visionary who, when he came and lived on this earth, he lived a perfect life. And in living a perfect life, he followed that one step to establish credibility. There was nothing that could be said against him. Jesus, he established that credibility as he lived here on this earth. Not only did he establish credibility, but I believe as God kind of being the ultimate grand visionary for what he wants to see happen, he didn't just establish credibility, he defined the problem. When he sent his son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross, he said that we have a problem, and the problem is sin. But the great news, and this is why I want everybody to catch this, We're not just talking about a story here that's, you know, over 2,000 years old. We're talking about the very character and nature of God and how He operates today. Because God didn't just establish credibility through His Son living a perfect life. He didn't just define the problem and say, hey, I'm going to send my Son to die on the cross. You've got issues. He cast a vision. God, our Father, cast a vision for your life when He resurrected His Son, Jesus, from the grave. And the grand truth, the big narrative of Christianity is that God isn't a God who just stopped with defining the problem and saying, hey, there's something wrong with you, go fix it. God is a God who moved into this world through the incarnation of His Son, Jesus Christ, not just to define the problem, but to glorify Himself by resurrecting Jesus Christ from the grave, thereby casting a vision. He said, I'm not so sure about that. If you're not so sure about it, look at the book of Romans chapter 6, verse 4. Jesus and His vision for us is that we would walk in newness of life. And the reason that we are so stressing this idea that you grab hold of what God is doing around you, that you define the problem, that you become broken for the things that break the heart of God. The reason we're saying that you define the problem and that you learn what vision is and how to cast that is because in the big picture, God is a God of hope. God is a God who desires good things to happen in your life. He's a God who desires to move in you and through you. God is a God who has an agenda for you. And so as you enter into this phase of actually sharing what it is that God is doing in you, understand that it's pretty much par for the course that not everybody's going to be as excited about your vision as you are. It's okay. I mean, if you think about it, if you were to look at, if you were to measure the effectiveness or the success of Jesus' vision casting when He was on this earth, there were a lot of people that He did not influence. There were a lot of people, if you were to look at it in history books, just looking at His isolated life, they would say He was a failure. Because there were many people who were opposed to that. And so you may have this vision that not everybody just runs to and embraces. It's okay. Continue to go back to defining the problem. What is it that breaks me about this? And continue to cast the vision. Don't let go. Don't lose sight of what this looks like to see your vision come to fulfillment when the problem is solved. People may not all buy into that, and that's understandable. That's just part of the process. But continue to move forward in defining the problem, casting the vision, and establishing your credibility. Let's pray.